philosophers in
space, 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 space.
They waste all their choices on the way to us. They want to own the light.
Living in fear of being torn limb from limb by the Minotaur may seem harsh to some people now, but you have to remember what it was like after 9/11.
That's right.
Were you wearing a mask? Were you burned by acid or something like that?
Oh no, it's just they're terribly comfortable. I think everyone will be wearing them in the future.
An animal caught in a trap will gnaw off its own leg to escape. What will you do?
Hello and welcome to Philosophers in Space, episode 164. Today, I'm Thomas, a podcaster. Oh, God. Why did you give me that personality?
Right, a terrible mix of traits.
Can I get a redo? Well, I've been uploaded with this particular persona. Ugh.
Yep.
Do they trade him out? Can you?
Mm-hmm. Right.
What's the refund policy?
We had
policy?
Just the right white male shell to put the podcaster yeah. archetype into.
I barely used it. I haven't used it. I just refund it. Read different. Uh-huh. Trade. Mm-hmm. Any other personality but this one. How's it going?
It's going exactly as well as you want it to be, master, with a little bit of like, I might murder you in your sleep, probably.
Mm, yeah.
Standard issue buying people situation.
Yeah. We watched Dollhouse. Episode one, yeah, Ghost, episode one, but not the episode zero that never aired, I guess. I don't know. That's always weird when they do that.
Yeah, there's some sort of unaired pilot for this one, and I'm not up on that lore.
What's with
Joss
Whedon and because the big thing with Firefly was like, well, part of the reason mm-hmm. that got canceled was they just didn't air the first episode that like actually tells you what the hell everything is. And they just started with Train Job, which don't get me wrong. I do love that show. I'm scared to go back and watch it now, but I've watched that show enough times, Firefly, that is, that I feel like I mm-hmm. know it enough still to feel like there are certain things that didn't work at the time, but I still think there's a lot of good stuff there, but I'm scared to go back and rewatch it now knowing that Joss Whedon. Just, I don't know. It kind of sucks.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a problem, right, with Whedon work, and we see it in Dollhouse, which is he keeps trying to make prostitution okay through various forms of, like, science fiction-y, like, justification-y stuff. And initially, I don't want to be against that, because I am very pro-sex work. But when it's coming from him, I then wonder, is this empowered, you know, like pro sex work science fiction, or is this like reproducing patriarchal male? And like this one especially, it's hard because I don't think this is a bad show, but like I worry about this show and like the implications of it for the artist is what I'm saying. In the same way that I would say, I don't think that Louis C.K.'s comedy sets were bad comedy sets, though in retrospect, they all reflect on the artist in horrifying ways, right?
Some of them. I mean, Louis C.K. is my favorite comedian. I still love his comedy, although I don't watch it anymore. He was my favorite.
Right, but you understand what I mean. Right?
Yeah, there's like some bits that were a little revealing, but I actually don't think that was always what was such a conundrum about Louis C.K. to me is that I remember Christy Winters on my show saying the same thing, which is it was hard to reconcile that his comedy did actually display a lot of the qualities that you wouldn't think you would find in a sex offender. You know, like it had a lot of there was a lot in it. There was a lot of actually empathy in it. There's a lot of and it's just I guess it's almost harder to deal with the fact that I feel like so much of his comedy showed that he probably should have a better understanding of, you know, like where he went wrong and what he was doing wrong. You know what I mean? Like it's almost worse.
Yeah, I guess I don't part of it maybe just be that because like someone had clued me into that situation early on, and so I probably watched a lot of his content through that lens initially. But I also do think that there was a lot of stuff in there about sort of self-hatred that I think tied up in his behavior. Like it isn't sort of like that's the tricky part, is that it isn't like red flaggy in the sense that like a lot of comedy is sort of self-debasement in that kind of way. And it may not be obvious ahead of time which of that is sort of connected to sort of worse behavior off the stage in that way.
Yeah. And who know, and another thing with like Joss Whedon in these shows is like there's a lot of people involved in shows, you know? I mean, I guess it depends. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of writers, a lot of people, a lot of involved. It sort of feels like all of Joss Whedon stuff has a similar quality to it at this point, though. You know, there's a mm-hmm. lot of like strong, you know, strong fighter woman, but who's also like an object to a lot of people, you know, like.
Yep. Sex object. Right.
Well, or just an object, like object, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, in both shows, in Firefly and I tried to watch Buffy. I could never get into it. Sorry, everybody who loves that show. But like in mm-hmm. at least in Firefly in this show, it's like, yeah, girl kicks ass, but she's also a super weapon. So everybody's just trying to get her in that way and use her in that way. And I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's not like it's, you know, wrong per se. I don't think to have that as your plot, but it is eerily similar. And there's like a lot of, it's weird that it's like kind of a one note thing of his.
Yeah. And this is where we're going to be sort of living in the philosophical stuff on this episode today, is the like this vague gray area of this feels like not wrong per se, but like yeah. something still seems kind of off. And like, I think this is true. And I watched through all of Buffy and like loved Buffy, but also I think it is tricky. You know, I want more opinions on it is what I end up feeling. Like, I want more people to tell me like what is their perspective on these things in terms of like levels of empowerment and like, are they portraying women in a way that is actually giving them agency versus just treating them as more impressive objects or something?
Yeah. Well, we better get into the actual show since I'm stuck with, mm-hmm. I'm stuck with this podcaster personality doing the show, I guess. I don't know. They said no refunds. I got to use this one.
It's only until the sun goes down. So you could run the clock out if you want.
Yeah. I could just nap. Did they ever do that? Just like, oh, this is who I am. I'm just going to sleep it off. I'm going to sleep off this white male podcaster persona. Wake me up when I'm somebody else.
That seems like something a white male podcaster would do.
All right. Why don't we go ahead and step into our exposition zone? So we'd better bop it.
Bop it!
You're traveling through another dimension beyond that which is known to podcasters. It is the middle ground between fair use and copyright infringement, between ordinary fanboying and meaningful analysis. It is the exposition zone.
Funny to think of the bop it as a kind of mnemonic ritual to get people into their programmed state. So do your job now, person who's just been activated.
Ah, jeez, we got it. I have to talk about the show. We got it, you know.
Can we get
start
a personality
off
that actually likes to do the exposition, though?
Well, the show is just mediocre. It's not, that's the thing, like you said, it's not like it's terrible or anything, and it's, you know, it's TV mm-hmm. from 2009 or 10, so I don't, you know, the mm-hmm. replacement, is it above replacement value? You know, like if we watched a different show that was, yeah, it's probably
a show called The Replacement that was on during that time that we could compare it to.
We watched
a
the
law procedural of
yeah.
some sort.
No, it's, I don't think relative to TV of the era it was actually that bad, to network TV of the era, like it's probably about yeah. as good as anything that was in network TV in the era, you know, like, but it's mm-hmm. just also so played out and boring. Like, so we start off with, we got their main girl Elijah Dushku, who's
Dooku, yes.
There's a lot of consonants involved for it to be Dooku. Just
yeah,
saying.
It's Count Dooku. Uh-huh.
Yeah. There's like several consonants before the coup. But anyway.
There is.
She, you know, we're doing a generic like motorcycle race thing, you know, and then it turns out to be a nothing. and she is really like tacky. She's a badass, but also dancing in a club with some guy. And then she goes into a, you know, like a spa or something. And they're like, well, she's done for the day. I don't know. And in retrospect, I get, was that just like they give her some R&R, whatever they call it? Like they give her some, what do you call it?
No, she was on a mission. That was her
That was a mission?
One of her missions. Yeah, yeah.
Because so I thought
there was a mission to be on a date with that guy.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. The way they were talking about it, I couldn't tell. I was like, do they give her like a vacation of sorts? But no. Okay. So they also, in the premise of the show is that there's a dollhouse full full of people that they upload different person that one, you know, one Mark Zuckerberg pretty much is Mark Zuckerberg. There's one
talk about Topher.
Creepy Mark Zuckerberg, aka Mark Zuckerberg. Just normal Mark Zuckerberg, who's in charge of like the entire programming of human personalities into blank slate humans. Which
that's pretty hateful. I'm a little bit offended as someone who has based some, you know, not insignificant portions of his personality on characters played by that particular actor.
Oh, really?
In mostly things done by Joss Whedon. Yeah, he's been in almost all of Joss Whedon's stuff. Oh. He was in Buffy and Cabin in the Woods and stuff like that. Oh, he plays the stoner in Cabin in the Woods.
You know,
and, like,
Cabin in the Woods was actually
desperately.
Good.
Cabin in the Woods is actually quite good.
Gives? You know, I feel like this, you know, it's a lesson that I don't think you could just throw out. I think it's easy to just be like, well, this guy sucks, so therefore everything he ever did sucked. And I actually don't think that's true. But also, this show seems pretty mediocre. And it's more like this one seems
derivative.
Especially
right after Firefly, right? It's, it's a clear step down from Firefly.
Yeah.
Well, it's got some stuff
also,
in it, but it's,
Again, it's also like plagiarizing himself, it seems like. It's the same kind of tropes over and over. And you're like, what's going on? Whereas something like the thing you just, Cabin in the Woods, that struck me as pretty original and different. Like I wasn't, you know, I watched that.
I mean,
like,
it is literally a movie that gets to every horror trope ever.
Yeah,
but you're right. I think it actually does it in an original way.
Is like
yeah, for sure. No,
remixing
absolutely.
All the tropes in a way. Yeah, we should do that one sometime. Or wait, did we?
Yeah,
no,
we did an ETV on it a long time ago, but we'll do one on here at some point for sure.
At any rate, she's a, you know, human shell that Mark Zuckerberg programs however he wants. Again, I was just gonna say, I feel like managing a personality upload to a like human body would be more than a one guy job, you know? Like
You reckon?
You know, he might have at least a receptionist or something. You know, like you got it, but it's just him. He's like, oh, I reconfigured the garbage. And you're like, yeah, okay, you're in charge of this entire thing. All right, sure, buddy. But anyway,
okay. This is hold on a second. This is a random diversion, but this actually raises an interesting thought to me. I wonder how much, you know, our as a species, as a culture's belief in like the great person approach to like science and history, you know, where it's like this one person does all the things, is like partly the result of like having theater that really can only have like 5 or 10 characters.
Oh,
in
I
it.
Do. So, no, like, I absolutely think that is it. I think we just want a nice, clean, like. All right,
we just did a clean story.
Yeah, like okay, we'll combine all the characters. It's you know, it's
just
annoying.
Just throw an Oscar Isaac at it, and we're done. That's all we need.
Yeah, or I remember watching Chernobyl, and you know, it's such a cool, realistic show until they do the part where like, and then this one scientist, and I guess there's maybe two of them, like detected the fallout, and you know, in that other country, and it's like what. Really? With one little crew, I guess it was technically two scientists, or like they're the ones breaking the news on this. But I guess people like to make these amalgams so that it can just be an easy, clean one character, as you say. But it still is kind of frustrating. Like it does take me out of it a little bit. But anyway, one creepy Mark Zuckerberg, regular Mark Zuckerberg, is in charge of the uploads. And so he wipes her hard drive there, and then she... I'm curious what her neutral, like her OS, you know?
Yeah.
I just thought about that.
I want to talk about this for sure, about like what's going on with the empties while they're hanging out in what appears to be a Silicon Valley like workspace, you know, environment.
Yep. Again, regular Mark Zuckerberg. And so that's kind of that. She's done with that job. She dated that guy for a weekend, I guess. Then we've got another situation, which is the main plot of this episode, which is somebody's been kidnapped, a girl's been kidnapped, and a rich father something. So that's clearly going to be the client for the next job. And so he's got to, he uploads her with some personality that's like expert hostage negotiator or something. And they also seem to imply, or not more than imply, I guess they say, that these personalities are combinations of multiple people. So they're taking personalities from real people and they're combining them. Again, something that feels like you'd need more than one guy. But that's fine. That's okay. Combining them in different ways. And he seems to say that he can be in charge of, you know, like every synapse and how it, whatever. And he's giving her like vision problems. She's nearsighted and she has asthma. He has that much control over this ridiculous upload thingy. So she starts her next job. Yeah. We also introduce the pointless character for this episode anyway, who I'm sure will develop later, but there's like the FBI guy who's like investigating Dollhouse, you know, and it's, they say it doesn't exist. And yet he's been trying to find it. But the funny thing is he's investigating Dollhouse, and Dollhouse is a thing that has to get clients, you know, like it feels like it'd be kind of hard to keep that a complete secret. I get that they're not going to be taking out billboards, but if something is like word of mouth among, you know, okay, the wealthy elite, but still, you're still, how many people are involved in that? You know, like the wealthy elite. How do you
involve with Jeffrey Epstein? I don't know.
Well, people knew about that. Like that was a thing. If the FBI wanted to look into Jeffrey Epstein, and they did actually, like that's why he was, you know?
I assume that someone knows about it. It's just not this guy who's chasing after.
No, like, but they literally say like situation. The FBI guy, they're setting up that he's trying to find Dollhouse. His immediate superiors are like, this thing doesn't exist. Like literally they're like, there's no such thing as Dollhouse. I feel like that would be, you know, that's a bit much.
That's what you tell your, you know, your molders, right? Your low level agents. You gotta tell them that there isn't a thing until they can eventually find out that there's a, you know.
That superior was a little too like smarmy, so he's gonna be involved or something, maybe. I don't know, who knows? Or maybe it'll just be an
asshole. Yeah, and this is a show like Westworld where there's like, you know, there's another layer obviously that's gonna be going on here at some point. And that's, you know, I think we may dip back into this show because there are a few episodes down the line that are like interestingly different in format and might be worth actually talking about some. But I don't give too much of that away for folks who actually do want to enjoy this movie from 10 years ago. Or the show from 10 years ago.
Oh, sure, yeah. Okay, where are we at? We got that guy. He's pointless for now because, again, there's nothing in this. It's just introducing his storyline.
Dude from Battlestar Galactica. That's where I know him from. That was driving me crazy while I was watching this. Like, yeah,
which character? Not the main pilot guy, is he?
I don't remember.
Yeah.
That's as far as I go.
Yeah. Like the good-looking pilot guy? Is that guy? Mm-hmm. I can't remember. Anyway, so forget that. Now she's working on this kidnapping. She's got to do the expert. I want to, you know, cover every outhouse, hen house. And she has to do that kind of character. Like she knows everything about this. You know, hostage negotiation. And yet everything she does seems wrong. You know, I know that's the trope, like the genius negotiate, the genius anything. When you're doing this in a TV show or a movie, the genius thing has to do unexpected things. You know, they've got to be like, no, are you kidding me? You don't talk to the negotiator, to the kidnappers and go like, oh, you know. Okay, we'll pay. You got to boss them around. You got to do something counterintuitive. Otherwise, you're not a genius enough. You know, you got to do all the opposite of expectations because that's what genius is. It's coming in and doing the opposite of what we all think is the thing. I think that's the easiest way to, like, you know, signify genius on TV.
Yeah, I love the way she comes in, just controls that sequence with the phone and stuff. Yeah, no, it is very cliche in those kind of ways because they're just trying to like establish a bunch of these tropes very quickly. There's also, I think, a funny running gag where like she's only done like 12 negotiations or something. Like this personality keeps referencing that like she's done this maybe like 5-10 times or something, and that makes her this expert. And like, maybe experts don't do a lot of negotiations in their lifetime. Well, I don't actually know what the average statistics are.
I don't know how many there are per day. You know, like how many?
I don't know the numbers are on that sort of situation, but it seems like that, you know, you'd program her to have simulated a few more than that in her being a composite entity.
I think it's implied that she also has like the knowledge background or that, you know, something, whatever, studied.
Well, yeah, because she has the personal experience part.
Which, well, no, we all know, I also, you know, mean like literally her like expertise too, like, game theory or something. I don't know. I thought they set up that she had some.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah.
But who knows?
She's an expert at game theory, which is why she knows to hang up on the
I know. Everything she does is wrong. And again, we're trying to do the counterintuitive genius thing. But everything she does, it also doesn't even help. Like, you have to finish that trope, you got to be like, whoa, that counterintuitive thing, it actually worked. It doesn't do anything. She ends up paying them more money. They want $5 million.
I know.
And she's like, or $6 million or something. She's like, I'll give you $8 million. And we're like, what?
Yep.
Oh, she upped the, without, what? And okay, it's like, all right, we want to make sure you get the daughter back. So we're going to, okay, sure. Okay. But then they end up demanding $10 million, and they still, in the end, are still going to do the double, you know, cross, not going to give the girl. So it's like, none of that did anything. You gave them more money and they still took the girl again for reasons that we'll reveal in a minute. So
no, I love that this person dropped a bunch of money to have someone show up and play the brilliant move of offer them more money. Yeah. Real, real big brain strategy stuff.
From the client's perspective, they're like, they're probably paying whatever.
Could have done that.
Yeah. Astronomical amounts of money to hire her in the first place. And then she comes in and just costs them more money. It's kind of weird. Right. So,
No, trust me. See. Why would I trust you? You just offered them more money for no reason.
And then the client guy, for some reason, is taunting her about the fact, we should add, the dolls in this dollhouse don't know that they're dolls. They just get uploaded. The whole thing is like, it's kind of against their will, sort of, or at least they're not, you know, that we know of. I guess we don't know how they got into this situation. Hypothetically, down the line, it could be revealed that they totally volunteered and consented for this.
There's one scene at the very beginning of the show where Dooku signs up for this in a like heavily coercive sounding kind of like exchange, essentially, where it's like she has no alternative or something, but it'll fix everything that is bad about whatever her situation was before.
Really?
But that we don't get any details, and like a lot of that gets revealed sort of over the course of the show.
So yeah, that's that. And let's see. So what happens next? Well, I guess so he's like taunting her about her situation. It's for some reason, do we know why that is? I guess it doesn't matter. And she doesn't know she's a fake personality, but he wants to like kind of tease her about or taunt her about it while, again, his daughter's been kidnapped. So that's always a time where you have a little extra mental energy to like, you know, just.
Yeah. He's blowing off some steam, you know, it happens.
I'd be like, why am I talking to anybody? And that's it doesn't really do anything, though. She just kind of triggers some sort of reaction in her. But I don't know that ends up mattering or anything. I would imagine the way the show's going, it'd probably be like, she starts to become self-aware. I guess.
How dare you predict exactly what's going to happen in this show? How dare you suggest that the rising action will involve her developing a persistent character over time? Yeah.
And so next, let's see, the kidnapping thing, we get to the point where we're actually going to exchange goods and services for exchange money for goods and services rendered.
Exchange bombs and services.
Yeah. And, again, there's a boat and they've got the girl on the boat and they've got the money and they've said, we're not going to give the money unless the girl's there. Cool. You've done an expert negotiation. And yet they give the money and she recognizes that one of the kidnappers is apparently a career kidnapper, made quite a, you know, quite a storied career out of kidnapping.
Well, he's not really in it for the money, is what's heavily insinuated here.
Yep. He's just in it for the love of the game. But also just the longevity of his career, I find impressive. You know,
it's true. No, I mean, he's clearly, you know, like he's the Brett Favre or
Brett
whoever.
Brett Favre is a good one. That's a more recent example would be Tom Brady.
I did a reference. Aren't you proud?
It's good. I mean, he is a real Brett Favre or Tom Brady. I feel like he's more of a Tom Brady because Brett Favre spent a lot of his later years just throwing interceptions, like the most interceptions in history. And this guy seems to be pretty good at the whole kidnapping.
I feel like
abuse.
we're gonna hear from Favre's lawyers about the fact that we're associating him with this particular character. I feel like this is not the kind of thing we want.
Fortunately, that's why we are a niche under the radar podcast. We don't have to deal with things like lawsuits for that reason. We can
thankfully,
say what we want.
Thankfully. Yeah, it's appreciated.
And so she recognizes him, I guess, because one of her I'm curious how the multiple personalities stitched together have memories. How does that work? I'm not a brain scientist, but like, all right.
It's a lot of jingly keys, buddy. I'm not going to lie to you. There's a whole lot of like, and like, there's some really funny like attempts at like they like hang some rules on their jingly keys, but it's still, it's a lot of like magic saucing it by Toaf.
Yeah, I know we argued about this the other day. I could at least buy, in sci-fi terms, I can buy the premise that you're like total copy and upload. You know, all right, I think I agree with you that that may also never be possible, but like it at least seems like a more reachable sci-fi thing. Like we scan the brain, we're able to do it at the level that matters, we pop it in the new brain, bam, Bob's your uncle. And here's, now we have Bob's your uncle as the person that we just, and anyway, Bob and your uncle. So, but this is like stitched together somehow. I don't know what the magic sauce would be. Stitched together different personalities, and then they have memories. Like,
so there is one sort of version of something like this in the world of like AI theory, which would be your AIs that are composite entities where there's like a chorus essentially. So instead of having a single consciousness, it's like there's a community on the inside and they communicate and then sort of make decisions as like a hive, or there are various ways that you could have, you know, a hierarchical organization amongst them or something like that. But essentially you're using different personalities as sort of modules. Think back to like our friend in Blindsight, right? The gang, right? Something sort of like the gang. But that's not necessarily what it seems like is happening here. This is more like we sample a couple of like Chinese buffet traits from a couple of different people. And like some of those traits are weirdly tied to disadvantages because reasons.
Well, just the ways
because we need it for the story, right?
Yeah. The ways that, memory works. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not just like, oh, here's the memory file, you know, that you access. And so a multiple personality stitched together person would have like, here's some memory files from this one in the hard drive. And there's some memory files from the other one. It's like, it's a lot more incorporated into your brain in many different ways that it strikes me as impossible to be able to do this, but whatever, it's a show.
Right. That's like the fundamental embodied cognition pushback to this sort of stuff in theory, which is that like, this is like a very naive mind body distinction. Right.
So, I'm just saying it's even worse than the typical like embodied. It's like, it's one thing to be like, again, okay, copy on the blank slate. We'll just assume everything like copies over. Right. It's another to be like, here, we're combining all these and somehow those are going to work in an integrated fashion. Like when she goes to do something, how have you integrated her sense memories of different personalities? You know, that just very implausible. Yep. But anyway.
There's a movie called Virtuosity that we'll watch that we can follow up on this. It's a classic.
Okay.
Russell Crowe, Denzel Washington, I think, peak of their game.
I know that one. That's interesting.
Nobody does because it's so obscure and terrible. It's going to be fun.
That's my favorite kind of movie to watch. but anyway, all this was to say, the point of all this was she's got that memory. Her character, one of the personalities, was kidnapped, and that's why she got into this line of work. And wouldn't you know it, she was kidnapped by Brett Favre. I can't wait till the next episode where we're reading statements prepared by Brett Favre's attorneys. Kidnapped by Brett Favre, who's still out there throwing, you know? He's still, God bless him.
He even looks a little bit like him, right? If you squint.
He looks more like
that's probably, that's probably not remotely true.
No, it's
they just
not
both
true.
Look like tall white guys.
No, it's not true. It's not all true. But not really. He looks more like there's a legendary UFC fighter. What is his name? I know his name. I'll think of it. I have no brain because we're moving and everything. But legendary UFC fighter, part of that great dual three-peat fight with the other legendary UFC fighter.
All right, for our fives of listeners who are UFC. Yeah.
He looks like that guy. I'll remember his name. Anyway, so that triggers her just meltdown, I guess. Like that's her reaction is a meltdown and asthma and stuff. And she's like, this is maybe the stupidest part of this whole thing. She's on the dock, right? She's making the deal with the guy, with the client. She's being covered by Dixon from Alias. I don't know. That same character, like the exact same character, except different actor. She's being covered. Right. Sniper. He's got the rifle trained on her, making sure he's her handler. Make sure the operation goes smoothly. And she's panicking, having an asthma attack. She's like, oh, they're not going to give you the girl. They're not going to give you the girl. And meanwhile, conveniently, the bad guy, the UFC legend, damn it, what's his name?
Yarp from Hot Fuzz, I think is another way to go there.
Oh, wait, yeah, that very much looks like him. Yes, that's way better. That's way closer. That guy, who's also in Game of Thrones, right? He's the...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that, it looks much more like that guy. Yeah, good call. Plus, you can remember something like his name, sort of. Yarp.
Yarp.
His name should be Yarp in that. And she's having a meltdown. Yarp shoots the client. And then the agent handler guy just, for some reason, shoots one of the kidnappers. And then's like, well, now I'm going to put away my sniper rifle and go run after them.
Yeah, I guess, like, we got to keep them alive or something.
Just shoot kidnappers. Yeah, no, you just shoot them in the leg. Shoot the kidnappers. Why do you need them alive? You don't need them alive. They brought the girl. You have the girl. The minute they had the girl, you know, like, you could have just shot them all with sniper rifles, because apparently that was fine. But, like, if say you're trying to still have a successful deal, you don't want, you know, gunfire. But once there's gunfire, just be like, oh, okay, shoot them all. Okay, shoot that one, shoot that one, shoot that one. It's already, crap's already hit the fan. But no, he's got to put down the sniper rifle, run over, and do nothing. He runs over to her, and he's like, ah, dang. It's okay.
Gotta have a third act, buddy.
Yeah. And so she's doing all that. They're taking her back to the lab because it's like, all right, she's having a meltdown. Gotta definitely go through her treatment, as she calls it. Like, that's what she thinks it is, some treatment. Gotta do that. But then the higher up is like, because again, there's a whole infrastructure to this business that is somehow secret. And
it's very progressive.
FBI.
It's run by a lady, as far as we can tell.
Yep. Run. In the year 2010, half of all supervillains will be female. That's the
obviously, with something like the Dollhouse, you're gonna gender wash it, right? Pink wash it by having a female CEO.
Female CEO, girl boss, you know, it's real lean in action here. She's like, we got a wiper. What are you doing? And the handler's like, no, she's the only one who can fix this problem. And the CEO, girl boss, points out a very good point, which is, hey, there's no client anymore. That guy got shot.
Contract's over.
Yeah, like, what? Who cares? You know, we're a business. If we're in the business of erasing people's memories, you know, having slaves, essentially, I don't think they're going to care too much that, like, oh, we got to finish this job of this kidnapping after the client is dead, basically.
Look, man, this is a very small batch, artisanal, in-house slave operation. There's a lot of complicated morals going on inside the Dollhouse. It's not straightforward about their operation involving human trafficking.
Yep. But and then I think maybe they realized how dumb that was later, because later on they're like, and the client's in stable condition. You're like, oh, okay. He got shot point blank in the
maybe
chest.
Maybe we should do the thing then. Yeah.
Yeah. but so somehow I guess he does convince her to keep that personality.
Yeah, they talk them into letting them have their final sequence.
Yeah. I don't remember the actor or the character being very convinced, but they're just like, all right, well, the script says
not remotely important.
Yeah. No. And so then there's the showdown at the OK Corral somehow that she finds. She tracks down everybody through knowledge that only she could do, which is pretty much just basic reasoning about the situation. She's like, well, one of them was wearing a mask, so that must be somebody the girl knows, because the other ones didn't bother. So then it turns out, oh, it'll be a teacher. And then... that somehow hops, giving a jump over to, I know which abandoned house they're in the middle of nowhere somehow. Whatever, it must be his name's on the property or something. Who knows? And she goes there. And again, and she does another incredibly stupid thing that only works out in TV, which is she just knocks on the door. Hi. Hey, kidnappers. Hi. Right. It's that irritating woman that you probably hate and would want to shoot. I'm just knocking on the door. Open the door. Oh, hi, kidnappers, all with guns aimed at me, that you haven't shot me instantly for some reason. I'm going to start talking now. And then she's like, hey, this guy, Randy Couture, finally got it. Okay. This guy, Randy Couture.
Finally got there.
Famous three-part bout with what's
like, it's like a release in the brain, right? You finally feel free.
Best counterpuncher ever. Oh, I got to remember the other guy too. That guy. Oh, classic. Chuck Liddell. There we go. Couture, Chuck Liddell. Just remembered. Finally. That was a great. Famous,
crushed it.
It's been years. It was about around the time of the show they were fighting, maybe a little before. Anyway, Randy Couture, she's like, oh, he's going to betray you because that's his pattern. Because, again, he's the Brett Favre of somehow putting together kidnapping plots of small children, getting the money, killing everybody else, and then taking the child and abusing the child. That's his whole shtick. That's Brett Favre.
Now, to be fair, we don't actually know his entire like record, right? We only know that he has successfully done this once,
which
was with the character that this personality is based on.
It's pretty solidly implied, or not even implied. Like, she's like, yeah, the history. And she like rattles off his records, you know, how many interceptions he's thrown in each of these places.
Right.
And it's impressive that someone could be in that line of work in that way for that long. I think, you know, tip of the cap, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Well done.
Mm-hmm.
And so she successfully convinces the room full of armed kidnappers that actually they got to shoot Randy Couture because his plan was to shoot them, which strikes me as an uphill battle. I'd just be like, oh, okay. If I was another kidnapper, I'd be like, all right, useful information. Now we'll keep an eye on Randy Couture. Still going to kill you, irritating lady who we don't like, who, you know, like we have no reason to spare your life. Like, why? What would be the point of that? But thanks for the tip. There's like two or three other of them. Hey, let's always keep a gun on Randy Couture here, no matter what, you know, and then we can finish the job. Done. Bam. Over. It's
divide
so
up
implausible.
The money, leave very quickly.
Instead, what happens is, oh, Randy Couture is a bad guy. And then you just shoot him. Like, the kidnappers shoot him. And then she goes and gets the girl.
I didn't realize that my fellow child kidnapper was going to double cross me.
I thought he was one of those nice, you know, chivalrous, honorable, upstanding child kidnappers.
Right.
And then she gets the girl. And then, bam, last pointless part, the girl from Altered Carbon comes in, shoots the two remaining kidnappers. Other girl was going to let him go. Main character, Count Dooku, was going to let him go and just be like, yeah, whatever. We got the girl. That's all I wanted. Who cares? But then Badass, you know, who makes you wonder, why didn't they put Badass on the scene from the get-go? You know?
Because that's not how you develop characters.
I guess, but it sounds like, you know, she's a badass assassin. She could have just been on the boat job, you know, like the meetup. Bam, 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 killed everybody, got the girl, done.
Yeah, job what I'm telling done. You is it's this way we get to see that Dooku can do a bunch of different characters, but also she's got backup from this other superhero who will inevitably probably have to fight her at some point, one assumes.
Oh, yeah, probably. And then there'll also be like, can she convince the girl from Altered Carbon to be on her side, maybe. I don't know. Depends on how much they like that actress and if they want to keep the character ongoing.
All sorts of hijinks will likely ensue.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Well, that's the show, I think. Anything else on that? Or can we move on to what short time we've left for philosophy, I guess?
That's all right. We got some good questions here.
All right. Well, I guess you'd better grok it.
Why don't you just tell me the right answer?
Well, that's what's so great about the trolley problem is that there is no right answer.
This is why everyone hates moral philosophy professors.
Yeah, so this one is really a whole episode of just like, I want you to point to me on the dollhouse where someone's doing something immoral. And what are they doing immoral and who are they doing it immorally to? Because I think the fun of this show is you have the sneaking suspicion that something about this is deeply immoral. But given the nature of personhood and such, it becomes at least a little bit tricky to try to locate what the actual badness is and where.
Okay.
I'm not gonna try to sell it. I'm gonna make you at least try to figure out why what's going on here is actually wrong and to whom essentially, right?
I have to. Oh, this is the philosophical challenge. I got to figure out what's wrong with the slavery mind wipe business LLC.
Slavery is a strong word for something involving
paid?
Consensual contracts. Yes, I believe there is some sort of compensation at the end of their 5-year package. that okay, I saw. So it makes a difference to you. As long as you're being compensated, you're fine with this?
Is it minimum wage or better?
Wow, I mean, what a neoliberal.
That's a lot. That's a lot of hours, too. You know, you got to make sure you're paying her for all the time. Mm. Yeah, she's on the clock 24-7.
Yeah, one assumes a five-year contract full-time 24-7 would come with a hefty price tag. Now, to be fair, right, we can at least highlight from a legal perspective, this is not a good contract because there's no way to enforce it because you have a highly secretive organization, right? It's not like there's any sort of public outcry if they don't release their slave people at the end of their five-year contract.
Not only that, I thought you were also going to say just the destruction of personality. How can you make a contract with a person that then you wipe? That doesn't work. You can't do that.
Can you not?
Oh, you can't make a contract to have yourself killed. You can't do that.
Well, but she's assumed she's going to come back at the end of the 5 years, right? Like they've got your consciousness on hard drive somewhere.
We'll have to see what Brett Kavanaugh thinks. We'll have to see what the Supreme Court thinks. I don't know.
I think as originalists, it's very likely that they're going to be in favor of whatever a corporation can make the most money off of.
Yeah, they're going to be in favor of like whatever the labor. Oh, it's a right to work. This girl has a right to work. Okay.
I mean, look, part of the discussion philosophically here and like, is this unethical question is like, is there really something unethical about selling your body into this kind of effectively slavery, especially if you're not experiencing it as such during the time? So we take away the like, and let's leave out the parts later in the show where obviously they're going to complicate it and make our lives harder by giving her a personality over time. But like, assuming the technology works for a moment, right? Is there really something fundamentally wrong with a contract that says you get my body for 5 years, I'm asleep during it effectively on a hard drive, and then I wake up at the end of 5 years and like all my problems are solved? That's effectively like Squid Game without all of the murdering people stuff being something that you have to carry with you forever.
Okay.
No, you're not into it.
Let's see, can you consent for, well, I mean, okay, you got to forget, I guess, the fact that everything they're doing probably involves some sort of illegal whatever, you know, like the jobs they're actually taking are probably illegal.
Okay, right. We'll talk about
that.
Like, I think we should talk about that
too. Let's just minimize to like, could you go into a lab and be like, you're going to, sort of how they pay people for medical trials or whatever. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to pay you to mind wipe you. I think that's, honestly, the risk is too great to be able to sign a contract. Like, I think it's the kind of thing where if it's so dangerous that you're likely gonna, you know, it strikes me as wiping your brain and hoping that that all works out and storing it on a hard drive is so dangerous that I think it's immoral to make anyone do that by applying economic pressure to them, like offering them enough money to make them do that.
That's fair. And we do get the impression at the beginning that this is a kind of somewhat coercive situation. So like, do you think that Echo is immoral when she signs up for this? Like, is she doing something wrong to like allow herself to be a tool in this kind of way?
Are we trying to blame the victim here? Is that what you're saying?
Not necessarily. I just think it's interesting to try to think about like, well, because like, I guess here's where I'm at with all of this, right? Is that a lot of this reminds me of the Dennett paper, Where Am I? The classic one where he's like, you know, imagine that I get split up between a computer and my actual brain. And there's like this copy of me in the, you know, the original and stuff like that. And in that story, one of the implications is kind of we tend to identify more with the mind than the body, right? That like, as long as the mind is fine, we don't really care as much about the preservation or the quality of state of the body. And in this situation, in theory, right, you have this, your mind is sort of separate and safe and protected, and they're just kind of using your body in this way. But I think we still identify with that person to some extent. And I think this challenges, I guess, a little bit the idea that it's just the mind that we care about. Like, I do think that, like, Count Dooku's body, sans her, you know, original personality, is still her in somewhat meaningful kinds of ways.
I guess, but I think the point of those, and there's also, is it Nozick or whoever did the teleporter thing?
Parfit, I think, does the teleporter Parfit, ones.
I think it is interesting that I imagine in a time, of course, we just because we identify with the mind more, I don't think that means we don't identify with the body at all. But I do think if you gave someone the choice, let's say you're in a dollhouse Eliza Dushku situation, and someone's like, here's the choice. You can have the body back with a different personality, or your personality. Let's say the body gets destroyed. Let's say, here are the choices. Personality gets destroyed, body is fine, but has a different personality in it. Or, you know, body gets destroyed, personality is fine, and we put your personality in a different body. I think, I would imagine, I know I would choose, like, okay, well, I would want my upload to survive and just put me in a different body. And bonus, maybe it's a good body. You know, maybe
yeah, be like, and that's, of course, you know, where this stuff is going to go. Whenever you have like a mind swapping, it's always going to end up like that Futurama episode where they have to like how many steps to get back to everybody being in the right bodies kind of situation.
Yeah.
So that raises another one, like in terms of like listing people who are moral or immoral. What do you think about evil, you know, CEO. Mark Zuckerberg character, right?
Oh,
like, because he has a whole monologue, right, where he's like, I'm not doing anything immoral. I'm just sort of doing the science and like the science is not bad.
Sure, I'm just connecting people. Yeah.
Right. I'm just putting people together with other people and like they're happy.
Oh man, that was, I've been laughing at my own joke for a minute here.
No, that's a good one. That's a good one, right? He's just, yeah. It has come to our attention that our platform is being used to murder some people. Our goal was simply to make friends. Literally, make them.
Oh, it's the parallels. The parallels are there.
Yeah. No, it's tight. It's tight.
Yeah, and then there's going to be like adware within the personalities or something. Like you're on a date with Eliza Dushku, and you know that you purchased, and then all of a sudden, mid whatever, she's like, "Oh, and this is brought to you by you know whatever." She has all your, and also, oh, the data. There we go. They wouldn't have thought of this in 2009, but the information about the clients, that's all going into the business model, I think. They know she knows that weird guy from the beginning who's, I guess, was dating her for money. She knows that guy inside and out. Now you're going to get targeted ads. You're going to get all kinds of privacy, you know, private information for that guy.
Right. So let's talk about the prostitution story as like an applied example of this, you know, the ethics of this particular situation, right? So this is not doing anything as far as we can tell that's like particularly, maybe street racing is illegal or something, but like they're not, she's not doing a bunch of wet work or something. Well, I guess she's doing some wet work, but not in the murdery sense
after
of the
dark,
word,
college
right?
After dark,
right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, save it after it, right? But, but my point is, if you're pro sex work, right, is there something fundamentally ethically different about what's going on in this particular situation?
Interesting. Again,
can we tag an immoral thing going on here?
I think that the very, I guess you could tweak the hypotheticals to where you're 100% certain of all the science. But I just think it's not a cop out. Like, I just think this whole thing is too dangerous to ever do. What if there's a hard drive problem? Oh, shoot. We wiped the personality. You know, like you lost your original personality. It just, there's
yeah,
way
like,
too much
job,
danger.
People take jobs where they risk dying all the time. That's like, that's a thing.
That's true. I feel like this is even, this is worse. This is more danger. But yeah,
I mean, why?
Sure.
I mean, like, in the sense that, like, Let's say the risk is very, very low in this situation, just like it's fairly low, you know, if you're working on an oil rig or something. But in both cases, you get hazard pay, right? Like if you die on the job, your insurance pays out triple Fight Club style or something.
The worst case scenario in this is so much worse, though. Like what we're talking about, uploaded personas. What if when you're in the hard drive, it's just pure agony and we don't even know? You know, or
there you go. That's the substantial difference.
You try to upload into the body and it's slightly off and you're just like this tormented, weird thingy, you know, it's just.
But again, you know, I think that like, yes, we can talk about the ethics of just what if the science goes wrong. But I also think it's valuable to like notice that I think one of our concerns in the situation is fundamentally deontological in nature, right? That there's something wrong about, even when you have a personality who is perfectly tuned for the encounter and so like is consenting in the sense of like in the moment is into it at all times, isn't like being pressured into it or any something like that. I do think we still have somewhat of a nagging deontological intuition that, like, they didn't really have the freedom, a moment of genuine sort of freedom to consent in a way that makes this okay, that makes it not human trafficking with more steps.
Yeah, okay, for the sake of the show, I'll ignore all that stuff. We'll say science is sound, 100% success rate. Mm-hmm. So what's the ethics of, like, hey, someone comes up to you and they're like, hey, Aaron, we got a client here, really would love to do things to you. They want to change your persona. They're really into you physically, not so much your personality.
It's fair. I understand that.
They've got a, you know, we've got a personality we're going to upload into you. You know, we're going to offer you, I guess, money. It's still, you say they're paying the client or the slaves. we don't like to call them that. The prisoners with jobs, paying the prisoners with jobs. But I never saw any of that. But anyway, let's say they come up to you and make that offer. So you really want to know the ethics of that. Is it okay to, you know, and who is being wronged? I guess if you consent to that, is there, are you worried about your, you being wronged, or are you worried about the other personality that they're putting into you?
Exactly. That's where I think we have to be genuinely concerned, is the personality that's being put into you. Like, and like, here's the tricky, I mean, like, we could stipulate for the sake of making the hypothetical even more challenging, right, to try to minimize, like, an escape hatch of a harm principle, like, to say maybe the personality really genuinely does enjoy it, right? Not, you know, the personality is feeling pressured into it or something like that, but, like, really has been properly calibrated to be into this person, to really feel like they're on the date of a lifetime or something like that. And I think that does make it hard, and I think it does, to me, illuminate that there is something more than just the concern of psychological harm behind, like, our ethical beliefs about this particular situation.
It seems like you're getting at using people as objects rather than, I guess the, what is it, Kant? Who is it?
Treating people as a mere means rather than an end in themselves. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I think that isn't something that, it seems to me from our conversations and from thinking about elsewhere, that doesn't seem to me that maxim or whatever holds up everywhere. But it does. It is interesting here. Like, if you, what level of this is okay? Like, if you put someone in a situation where you know they're going to act a certain way or do a certain thing, it's interesting to talk about the line there. Is that still, I think it's a matter of degree, probably, you know,
if
you set someone up on a date,
I was just thinking that.
Where you're like, you know, they're going to love the person, you know, or whatever, they're going to be really into the person, you know, what they like or something, hypothetically. Yeah, it strikes me as, doesn't seem like most people would think that was unethical. If you're like, hey, you're setting someone up on a date with someone, you know, they'll like, cause they like, I don't know, whatever characteristics, but you could see it, you know, going too far, a matter of degree. If you are in complete control and you know, enough about their preferences and what they would do, that you're essentially engineering everything they're going to do, then it probably crosses that line into, like, well, you violated their autonomy in a way.
Yeah. I think it's very tricky. I even think it's actually tricky for the situation with the child kidnapping too, where it's obviously they're like, this episode is set up to contrast them, where, like, the first one, nobody gets hurt and it's totally fine. But the second one, you know, the personality suffers because she's confronted with her her abuser in the situation, right? But even there, like, switching to a utilitarian perspective, is it ethical to say, well, look, we composited this personality out of an individual who, if she was still alive, would have consented because she would have wanted to save this child. And, like, we saved the child and we knew exactly what was going to happen to this child, right? There's, like, there's no question about, like, what amount of harm we prevented and, like, what future children Brett Favre was going to do this thing to if, like, Dooku doesn't step in. That's a lot of utility. And, like, what's the cost, right? A constructed personality has a really bad day, but, like, also has a good day because she saved the child.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just trying to make it a little tricky here, you know? Like, That's all.
I think make it a little tricky. Yeah, I'm trying to, you're trying to complicate, gum up the works on this otherwise totally normal
fairly
scenario.
Straightforward. Yeah.
Yeah, we're a little over, but I think I took too long on that. How did I take so long to summarize that show? You know, I think we did talk a little philosophy in with the
it was
premise.
Good.
Yeah, so sorry for taking too long. I think we can go a little extra for everybody here and maybe do a, you know, cut into the After Dark unless you want to cut over to that now.
I think we're actually pretty good here on the wrap up. We'll save the other things. There's some interesting stuff I think to be said about the blanks that we haven't talked about yet.
Yeah.
And some of the like tropiness of achievement balanced by lack that shows up here in this first episode.
I really do want to know what that operating system is, you know, because it's not, it doesn't seem to be just her, whoever that person was. Because otherwise she'd be like, ah, what am I doing here? I'm caught in something or whatever. I don't know. It seems to be like a neutral person, like, which I don't think is entirely plausible. Unless it's, I guess you just erase enough memories or something, or you only put in a little bit of memories to where they're kind of blank people, like in like in the island, maybe like that kind of. Like they're just walking donors, organ donors.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I think let's we'll save that for patrons because they help us out, you know.
I imagine there's a lot of After Dark to be done on this one. So we'll cut over to that. But first, let's do what we do every show. Why don't you see what our patrons are going to make you say this week?
As a human, I was ill-equipped to thank you, but as myself, you have my everlasting gratitude.
Yeah, thanks to our strong AI patrons, Gabby, Big Easy Blasphemy, OperationBrowniePockets.com is a free game you play in real life. MR, My Name is a Joke from another podcast from like 3 weeks ago. Dude, Corey Ebert, Dehydrated Myself Until Aaron Makes Me Moist. End the Illegal Police Chaplaincy in Covina, California. End the Theocracy Now. Jesse Urbanowitz and Brenda Goodman. Chad T. And the Official Cult Compound Planning Committee Beach Trip Division. And all the thanks to our definitely not a blank that we implanted personalities into just for this show. Level patrons, 3 Body Problem 2, Trisolarans Wilder and Crazier. And we all know Aaron has a spider tulpa. Thank you all so much.
Fantastic. And what's our preview for next week?
Yeah, so next week we're hitting up the Foundation. So Apple, I think it's on Apple, right? Has got the Foundation trilogy in watchable format, which is good because like they're fun as a series, but I think they've probably aged a little bit and it's a fairly long one. So I'm excited that folks can enjoy it. And I've watched the first 3 or 4 episodes or so, and I'm pretty into what they are doing with the content. So we're probably going to get, I think, 2 episodes out of it. We're going to talk about some long-termism and some, you know, the canon / cultural literacy kinds of questions.
Yeah, Apple TV, people might already have it for Ted Lasso. I also,
yes,
we also
it's available on your Ted Lasso app for people who aren't familiar. Yeah.
Exactly. Ted Lasso TV. I also started, we're watching Morning Show, which I actually kind of like. I'm pretty hooked on it. The first episode was pretty hacky and Sorkin-y, and I didn't like it. But after that, they kind of eased up on the Sorkinisms. And it's a good show. So check it out, I guess. So a different thing. We're not a sci-fi thingy, but
While you're on Apple TV, you can hit up Schmigadoon as well.
Oh yeah, that's on there too. That was a lot of fun. Good. I feel like it didn't live up to the promise. Like I feel like the finale was a little weak, but that show was a lot of fun. If you're a theater person or you know somebody who's a theater person, they're going to enjoy that show. All right, well, let's get on over to After Dark. Hop on to patreon.com/0G. Otherwise, we'll see you next week.
This has been a burst transmission of Philosophers in Space. All music written and performed by Thomas Smith. If you've enjoyed your infotainment upload, please locate the nearest podcast interface device and fill it with 5-star ratings and glowing reviews. If you think ground control should spring for fun new goodies and content, consider supporting us at patreon.com/zeroG. You can find us on Twitter at zeroG philosophy, where Aaron will instantly and compulsively respond. Or you can email us at philosophersinspace@gmail.com. Finally, if you're sad that it takes so long for our signals to reach Earth, you can always find Thomas over at Serious Inquiries Only and Opening Arguments, and Aaron over at Embrace the Void. Until next time, live long and philosopher.